I'm glad you're here. And as Pastor Jazz said, we definitely want to make sure this is interactive. So I will put my stuff to the side if we just want to sit here and chat, you know, because I know taxes time is around the corner. Make sure we're doing it right, doing that. How many of you, before we get started, how many of you do your own taxes? 1, 2, 3. Excellent. I do my own. H&R Block. 4.
H&R Block online.
They do it for you?
Well, I do. I enter in all your information. But it's
oh, good. Free. Okay, excellent. Yeah, that's what I do. I use TurboTax, and that's an excellent program. Costs $29, and I can do 8 people, so all my whole family I do it for. How many of you have actually had your one of your kids, you do taxes for your kids under 18? I did for my kids all the way through, and so it's very, very good because it starts to build their credits as they're going along in taxes. So if your kids are doing babysitting, you can do that. Well, that would be kind of under the counter type income. But if they're actually working somewhere and they go to work at McDonald's or something like that, do the taxes for them. You don't have to wait till they're like 18. You start doing it right away, and it actually is really good for them to do that. But anyways, that's kind of on the side. It's a side note. What we want to do here for sure is I want to welcome you to the room of the rich people. And you're thinking, well, I'm not the rich person. But you are. As we cover that today, literally across the world, you are one of the richer people. So I'm glad that you're able to come here, and we'll try and see if we can cover some stuff for you the best we can. And stop and think about it. We work 5 days, some maybe it's 6, but we work 5 days, and we get 2 days off with pay. Like, think about that anywhere else in the world. We get, for our working 5 days, we get 7 days of food, 7 days of shelter. And we kind of put this into perspective where we really are. And some of us might be, you know, if you can complain that your car broke down, that means you have a car, okay? So you are in that category. If you can complain that, you know, I have to cut the grass again, you actually own grass. Okay, a lot of people don't own grass. And on and on and on and on it goes. If you ever had a garage sale, anybody have garage sales? Garage sale, I've had a garage sale. It's because that's extra stuff that you spent a lot of money on, and now you're going to sell for a little tiny bit. So that's what a garage sale is. Now, there's ways to use something like a garage sale where you can actually make money because you buy something for cheap and you sell it a little bit more and no one knew. So you can do that, or you sell stuff that you got for free. Hopefully it wasn't a Christmas gift and someone comes by and sees that you're selling their Christmas gift or something. But you can actually make money with things like that. But the moral of the story is we actually do have some cash. We actually do have some income, and so now we have to decide how we're going to do it and what we're going to do with it. Are we going to just kind of use it? And it would be really nice, as I kind of talked a little bit this morning, if we had way more margin, more space, more breathing room. It's in that space where if it's tight and small, there's more marriage breakdowns if the margin is small. There's more men after 40 years old that have heart attacks. And it's not because, you know, I'm working so hard, but most of it is because the stress, the pressure, the juggling, all this kind of stuff, and a lot of it has to do with finances. And so it really takes its toll on us physically, takes a toll on us relationally. And so if we can get that margin a little bit wider on, you know, different ways we can get rebates from our taxes or different ways that we can, you know, stretch our dollar a little bit better or be wiser in our management, in our budgeting. Things like that. So that's kind of what we're going to talk about today, how to kind of make that happy space a little bit happier and how to make finances and money kind of easier, like way easier to live and survive. So we want to do that. What I'm going to do, you'll notice on your right-hand side of every single page, there's lines. So if we just talk about stuff and it's not on the notes, that's a good thing. So just write it down. It's like, oh yeah, I didn't think about that. As we're asking questions and talking back and forth, someone might ask something that's totally off the topic, and you might want to write down some notes. So that's for you. Jot down some notes the best way you can. And yes, this is being recorded, so you might be able to go back to that, go on the website and listen to that if you didn't quite catch something. But we'll try to see if we can go slow enough and interact enough so you can actually jot down notes, and this just becomes a discussion. This is not a lecture where I'm just going to take over and lead and bring you through conversation, but I want to communicate back and forth. That's what I hope we can be at that spot. So we've heard that money, if we go to this next one here, you've heard that money can't buy you happiness, but It's possible that money can buy you happiness. Like, literally, it can. I know that church world tried really hard to make sure that people just weren't getting off track. And so we kind of pushed money as the evil thing. Like, but money is a good thing. God gives it to us for a purpose, and we can use it for Him. We can use it for selfishness too, obviously. And I think that's why the church tried to, you know, shun it and push it off to the side. But yeah, money can't buy you happiness, but it can buy you space, freedom, breathing room. And if you use it properly, it can buy you great joy if you use it properly. That's for sure. So we're going to make sure that we're doing that for sure. So the connection between happiness and I don't have enough and how do I get a little bit happier is not more money, but it is more manage. So you got to somehow manage your money to the point where you're using it properly. So how can we do that? How can we get to that spot? How many of you, before we get a little bit further on, how many of you have ever in your life used a budget? How many of you know what a budget is? Yes. How many use it right now? Okay, we'll get a couple of you. So it's trying to keep track of the money you got coming in and keep track of the expenses going out so you're not off balance and so that you can actually use things. If we were to actually all use a budget properly, I think we'd have more money to tithe. I think I'd have more money to give to God, to pour into mission, pour into ministry, to help your next door neighbor. But we don't have a budget, so we end up going beyond the lines. That's usually what takes place. So we definitely don't want to go there, that's for sure. When it comes to this, as I talked about this morning, our spending tracks our income. So as our income goes up, our spending goes up, and it becomes really hard. We run out of room. And so how can we kind of get back to the fact where we want to be this, where money becomes fun again? It's good. It's not evil. So I'm not saying where money becomes evil, because that can happen too. But where life can become more relaxed and more relaxing. A lot of people think that if I would make more money, then it would be easy. But as I mentioned this morning, just the wealthy people just spend a whole lot more money anyways. And we know that in our own life. So that's not it. But how can we reprioritize ourselves? So number one, this is literally what we have to do. And this is a hard thing to think about, and it's a hard thing to get in our brain. But we have to be content. We really do. We got to get down to the point where I'm okay with having a little bit, or at least a little bit more, but so that I got breathing room and I'm not going to run out of money by the end of the month. So I can actually have some savings, so I can have some future, so I can retire. We've got a lot of people nowadays where they're 75, still working, because they never managed their money earlier, and now they haven't got enough anymore at all to be able to retire. And they're forced to retire. We just had one guy who was one of our pastors, and he just does not have enough. But now at 75, he can't continue to make money because now it's kicking into gear for his pension, so he has to keep on doing that. So now he has to really sliver things back, because you just don't have enough money now to get that extra little job on the side. So we've got to make sure that we're watching that. Discontentedness, I'm not sure if you realized, but it is very powerful. When you're discontent and you're not happy with life, that's what happens to our marriages. That's what happens to the heart attacks and on it goes. So you're not content. You just got to have a little bit more. So it would be nice if we can get to that spot. I often think when I was 12 years old and I had a paper route, and how much more money I felt like I had back then than I've got now. And I didn't make very much, but I had so much extra space, and it was all play money. The reason why it was all play money is because my mom and dad paid for everything. So the moral of the story, you got to move back in the house and get a job. No, just kidding. You still got to pay your bills. You got to pay your debts. And I just don't have enough anymore to do that. But every once in a while, I think, man, that was so great. Like, there was no worries, no stress. I didn't even know what a bill meant. Like, I didn't know what that was. Didn't know what taxes were. Didn't know any of that kind of stuff. So now we got to juggle that kind of stuff. So it's not so easy anymore. It's very, very hard for us. Yeah.
mean, I guess that's powerful too.
Yeah. 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 There's more of the emotion of I'm distraught. That's the powerful side of it. And it can really drive you in a bad way in your life.
Never.
All the time. Yeah. It would be nice if we could shut off our TVs a little bit. We talked a little bit about buying a TV, and our pastor just bought a TV. Get that thing. Absolutely. So if you take a hammer and smash it, let's just get it out there. That's great. The TV. He would know. That's great. The problem with TV is the marketing. Like every commercial, every television show, it's just, you can't get away from it. Yeah, totally bombarded. And it's just hammering, where you can't help but become discontent. And it just drives us in the wrong direction. Credit cards, debt, lines of credit, and we just can't be able to survive because we're stuck in a hole. And if we could just get out of that hole and get back to reality, get back to, some people would say the basics. I don't say the basics has to be, I got nothing. The poverty mentality that went through our churches before, I don't think is a healthy mentality. I think a lot of people thought, if you really want to be godly, you should have nothing, like zero, like live on the street, then you're godly. Well, I don't think that's what God intended, but God intended that we would use our money properly if we got it. You even look in the New Testament, there was the story that we just talked about this morning, the story of the talents or whatever it is. There's stories of rich people in the Bible, and God's blessing was on them, but it was just all about purpose. What are they going to use it for? So we're making sure that we're doing it the right way. I'm going to read for you 1 Timothy. Oh, here's a picture of a TV. Do you remember that kind of TV?
That's what I have.
That's what you had. Yeah. You can't really hang that on your wall. That's, oh, they were terrible. In those days, I remember hearing my parents talk about the TV. You had to actually sit in a line. I remember watching Happy Days. They had to sit in a line straight with the TV. If you'd be this way, you couldn't see it. It's like straight on. Well, we've changed, and it's okay. Change is okay. The new TV, Pastor Jazz, is fine. Nothing wrong with it. I want to read this scripture for you. This scripture here, I just mentioned the first line this morning, but I'll read the rest of this thing. For godliness with contentment is great gain. So that's where we want to go. Just be content. That's a good thing. For we brought nothing into this world. That's true. And we can take nothing out of it. So don't try and bank everything so that, great, I'll be able to take everything right to my funeral. And so that's not the goal. But if we have food and clothing, that's really basic. That's like Africa basic. We're not even there in our culture. We will be content with that. So in the Jewish time back when the Bible was written, that's what Paul was saying. Hey, I'd be happy with just that. That I'd be okay. I don't need all the stuff. It's great if it comes, but I'd be happy if I go down to the bottom. Those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. I could actually summarize that with the word credit card. That's what it is. Many people want to get rich, so they want to look like they're wealthy. So they'll use their credit card so that it makes it look like they are, but they're really not. So they want to get rich. They fall into temptation. They just go down. No matter how rich you are, we'll keep on doing it. The people who are very, very wealthy, they still go into credit. And a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. You've heard the verse that says that money is the root of all evil. It's not money, but all kinds of evil. So it's not the fact that money is bad, but money can get you down the wrong road. And that's usually what happens. Yeah, exactly. You're coveting. You want it. And it becomes your God. It can, for sure. Or it can definitely become your noose and you're hung with it because you went so far down. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Some people, eager for money, so I hope that's not you. That's not what this is about today. If you thought this is about how can I become rich, now this is how can I breathe and how can I manage what I got, what God's given me. That's what today's about. Some people, eager for money, have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. That's I've seen that as a pastor for 25 years. I've seen people run after that instead, and they leave God on a shelf. And some, who knows where they are spiritually today, and I don't know where they'll be for eternity. I don't know. But people run after it. I graduated. In our generation of pastors, we have a hard time finding pastors to fill churches like this because something happened in our generation, so the Generation Xers, where most of the people that I graduated with wanted to go for the money. They knew that when you pastor, you're going to be broke like a church mouse. So hopefully I can get some kind of different type of a job where I'll be able to be richer and I'll have more money. And they went after it. Now, I don't know where they're at in their heart. I couldn't even guess. But I know for myself, it would be grinding against me if I would have went against ministry. I feel happy. I feel satisfied because I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. I was called to do that. Not everybody in this room is called to do ministry. You're called to do what you did or what you're doing right now as an income. Great, it's great. That's what you're supposed to do. But if you get off, you know, well, I think the grass is greener over there. I want to go to that firm, go to that thing. That might not be where you're supposed to be. And then it starts to grit against you and work against you. So they pierce themselves with all kinds of griefs and stuff that they were running after the dollar and they weren't supposed to. And that's not the place they were supposed to be. And they could have a good income where they're at right now, but they thought it would be better over there. So that's where we're trying to steer against. It's not loving money. It's not running after money because it can be a snare. It really can be. So we got to make sure that we're doing the right thing when it comes to that. When it comes to being content, I think that money can actually master us. It can actually drive our life and push us so far where we shouldn't be or don't want to be. And it becomes our controller. And we want God to be our master instead of our stuff, like we talked about this morning, that story. There's two masters, either God and money or God and your stuff. So what's going to drive you? What's going to push you and force you? We'll look at this next one here. Number two, debt. If we could kill it, like literally, if we could kill debt. So there's different ways to kill debt. For sure, definitely budgeting is a very important thing when it comes to it. We got to make sure that we're killing debt and getting rid of it. I want to show you this, just kind of a quote I got from, and I'll turn over to you and show you where I got it from in just a moment. But excluding mortgages, Canadians, who are part of the four most wealthiest people in the world, Canadians carry an advantage of, average of 22, it's not an advantage, an average of $22,000 of commercial debt, each Canadian. So that's not mortgage, that's the credit cards and the line of credit. That's the my car, my boat, my yacht. I've extended myself out $22,000 in debt.
Is that the average person or family?
Person. Is that crazy?
Nothing to do with the government money.
Yeah, so this would be, yeah, the government probably would be considering those who are 18 or more when they do their taxes, right? So it's every adult in Canada. And we got people that are living on the street. It wouldn't qualify for that at all, like none. And those who are in welfare wouldn't be qualified. So we got people that are hugely in debt in Canada, and we are going down, and we're suffering, and our lives are falling apart because of it. But I sure would like to have that new car. I sure would like to have that new whatever it is. And so the marketing is driving us, and we are going in debt, and it is huge. And see if I can show you. This is where I got the report from here, the giving report. This is from the census that we did back in 2016, I think it was when it was. So these are figures with 2015. So when it comes to donating money to a charity, this is where it kind of shows you what the facts are like, donating money for a charity. Religion, kind of nice thing, religion is high on donations. But everything else, you see, all we spread our donations out to many different activities that we got, many different types of charities. And if I slide down here just a little bit, it says here in 2015 that donations to charities, so that includes churches, went down 5% from 2006. When we do our next census, I wonder where it's going to be, probably even down to 15%, because we're so maxed out, we don't have any extra to be able to give to these charities. Heart Foundation, on and on and on and on it goes. And so we actually just give little if we have to give any at all. So when it comes down to it, here's a strange factor that those who make $250,000 a year or more give 2% on average in Canada to a charity. But those who are down in our range give more percentage than they do. This is right from Canada Stats. So we feel like we got more space somehow. And the richer you get, the less space they feel like they've got. And they've got to, well, I got to keep it because I'm going to go down if I don't. And so we're actually more generous than those people that make more money. And on it goes. So it's kind of really, really weird. You can see about double income and two kids and all of that. There's the stats for you. But the moral of that whole picture is that at least we are still kind of giving a little bit. Canadians have a variety of ways in which they give. This is kind of interesting. We notice this in churches when it comes to donating at the end of the year. That's when they start really coming in, November and December. It's like, oh yeah, tax time. So I think a lot of our people are thinking, tax deduction, that's why I want to give. Or they're thinking, I didn't pay attention, and I'm not budgeting, and I'm not tracking, and now I just looked and like, oh man, I got to catch up. One or the other, so it's not a healthy way of giving. That's kind of impulsive, it's not tracked, it's not planned, or it's desperate because really what I want is a tax rebate at the end of the year, and a God thing, oh yeah, that's out there, but I really want the tax rebate. So that's kind of what really happens on all of our donations at the end there. A monthly giving represents 16% of all dollars donated on Canada Helps. So that would be, they track all charities, Canada Helps. So monthly giving represents 16% of all the dollars donated. So it's just kind of some neat facts that we got. So if I can go back to this one here, when it comes to us and our debt, we are extremely in debt, and we don't have room to give because we're so much in debt. But there's two ways that we think about. The reason why we get into debt so bad is because we want to increase our standard of living. We either want to make it look like we are like everybody else, high plush, or we just want to feel like it ourselves. Somehow we want to get our standard of living up higher so that either we're recognized or we feel like, yeah, I'm keeping track with the spending of everybody else. And so what we'll do is we'll try to increase it by two ways. There's the slow way of increasing our standard of living, and that is by saving money. Some people will actually invest, and they'll just kind of climb their bank account. They'll increase the size of their bank account so that one day they'll have enough cash to be able to buy those things. Those people are very few and far between today. There's not a lot of people who do that. It's slow. We don't want to do that. We want it now. We want it fast. And so what do? We'll use our credit. And that's how we'll make ourselves look and feel better. Everyone else will think we're more rich and we'll feel like we're more rich, but we actually just keep on going down and down and down and down. So what I'd like to do is be able to open up the space just a little bit. That margin we just talked about, and how you have to be able to open up that margin is each one of us have to start getting off the track and realize we are a slave to money. And I think that's the whole other thing that God was trying to say when it comes to where your heart is, your treasure, all that kind of stuff. We are actually a slave. Because that's all we end up living for, and we're stuck in it, and we can't get out. So hopefully we can get out of that a little bit easier today, give you some tips that'll help you get a little bit past that. This next one here, yep.
I've got to jump in here because I understand what you say. Slowly save, invest, climb. But the reality for the last 10 years, you save away at 2% if you're lucky, 3% if it's a miracle.
Yeah.
Whereas if you go into debt and you bought a house, probably doubled in the last 10 years and whatever.
Awesome point.
And so when you said kill debt, I would also add there's good debt and there's bad debt.
Absolutely.
And if you're taking care of your family and whatever, and you're able to, the quicker you can get a mortgage and provide, that's good debt.
Yep.
If you're eating out more often than you should, you're getting the coffee at Starbucks every twice a day.
Yeah.
I consider that bad debt.
Bad debt.
And everybody can relate that to their own situation. So, two ways to increase our standard of living: slowly save, invest, climb. Actually, that doesn't work today, and it hasn't worked since the financial crash in 07, 08, because there's every disincentive out there not to save. I'm not saying you shouldn't save.
Right.
I'm not saying you shouldn't have something for a rainy day, but unfortunately, if you'd followed that model for the last 10 years, you would never have got the down payment, and that house price or that condo price or whatever is just way out of reach.
Right. I would consider a mortgage or a house an investment, big time. And you're right. When you're tracking, I would say back from the 50s, the only thing that really has kept up its value has been mortgages or been property. That's really it. Now, I don't know what's going to happen around the corner because we are so high, the next generation, the kids, the teens, they won't be able to buy your house. So what happens when no one can buy your house? Prices go down.
Hey, it's not just kids who can't buy houses now.
Hello. Hello.
We're kids.
Yeah. Put it this, anybody that has not been in the market for longer than 15 years just can't buy anything anymore.
No,
like you just can't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. What a lot of people do now is partnership.
Yeah.
Partner, like their growing child moves in, or a neighbor or a friend. Yeah. In Vancouver, it is so bad in Vancouver that people, it's almost like you go across seas and you go to Hong Kong and you don't have anything larger than a 400 square foot apartment in Hong Kong, and it's a million and some. So in Vancouver, it's the same thing. And so they'll have, like, we're going to have half of the living room. We're going to share the kitchen. Those bedrooms, they're mine. And your friends bought the other half of the first floor. And it's just crazy. But it's investing.
And I tell you, Vancouver's got one of the highest standards of living in the world. Hello?
It is. Yeah, it really is crazy. Yeah. 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 With the new taxes that are on our purchasing of property, it might affect it. And it might level. And if it levels and people are scared to buy, then it's going to go down. And if you just finished buying in the last 4 years, you might be in trouble because then it won't be worth as much as you had when you bought it. And on it goes. It's scary. That's why don't put your hope in riches. Put your hope in the one who richly provides. That's all we can do. Yeah. Yeah.
Because you don't want to overburden yourself. You don't want to overburden yourself with mortgage you can't pay.
Yeah. You have to qualify for the test that they give you. Yeah.
The 5.95%.
Yeah.
Now that it's completely out of reach for everybody, they tighten all the rules where it's impossible.
Well, no. I mean, it's not impossible. It's because the Bank of Canada, the government, does not want to give Canadians more debt than they can handle. That's the point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. All
and you're right.
Everything's got higher and higher. And this is a little bit off topic. Are we allowed to go off topic?
This is good. This is good. We'll actually come back around to that, because those things we're going to talk about in a bit. Keep on going.
I'm
going
to go out on a limb and say, wait till the wealth tax comes in. And the reason I say wait till the wealth tax comes in, because it'll be very interesting to see what's happening down in the States and Trump or the Republicans go up for election.
Yeah.
And our Prime Minister has said that that's one of the things that he wants to put on our on the agenda. So the wealth tax will mean... when you pass away, the government will be clawing more of it, and the capital gains exemption on your house, will be going in the future. So I'm not saying that's going to happen, but given the way the world's going, I'm quite nervous about all that.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen this year, but 2020-21, it's like it could be on the table.
Yeah, definitely could be, for sure. I know we used to be... entrepreneurship country, but I think we're moving more social now, socialism, where, you know, the government would keep on taxing, and we basically got to surrender it.
Yeah. Get it from the younger generation, and rightly so.
Yeah.
But all of us who were fortunate enough to have a property or a house or whatever, it's all gone up, and I can just see the rise, and we want part of that.
I know. Yeah.
We do.
But you have to, because if you don't, you'll be living in a cardboard box one day. So somehow you got to track and keep with it. But the bad type of investments, like you mentioned, like a car. A car is the worst investment out there. It really is. As soon as you drive off the lot, and I've got a car right here by the door, 2015 Santa Fe, and I bought it brand new, my first vehicle brand new. I had 0% interest, so that's the only way I could do it. So that was good. But I still got to make payments on it. But as soon as I drove it off the lot, I lost 30%, just like that. It's the worst investment ever. Now, unless you buy one that's kind of breaking down and you know how to fix a motor, okay, so you can do that. Put a little bit of elbow grease in, and you can work a little bit, and then maybe you can sell it for $1,000 more. You can do that. You can clean up a car. So buying cars that are used, clean up a car, and then sell that for $1,000 more. And great, you can make a little bit of money. So you can do that. There's ways to make, there's good debt, or good investment, and bad investment. Yes, you're right. Absolutely, you hit it right on the nail. Absolutely, yeah. Oh, yep. My kids, who are, well, now 27, 26, all the way down to 21, they crossed the line of, oh, I have to pay for insurance for my car and gas for my car. And just because you got a car doesn't mean it's golden. Now it's costing you so much throughout the year.
Oh,
yeah. And if dad wasn't a Mr. Fix-It, they'd have repairs. Just getting your brakes done, like I redo brakes for my kids, and that would be $1,000 at a garage. Well, I can do it for $30, brake pads. So, you know, there's...
They can actually put your net worth down into the minus, from what I can understand, because of, not just because of depreciation, but because of the potential for expenditures and stuff like that. After a certain amount of years, I know that certain creditors and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Devaluation based on the book value and stuff like that, right? I remember my wife and I, we both had our two vehicles, and they said, because of that, they are technically their assets because they're a clear title.
Yep.
Yet that notwithstanding, your net worth was.
Yeah. Oh, it sure does. Yeah, and you did it because you wanted to make it look like you were further ahead, but now you're further behind. Yeah. All right, so I'll give you this one here. Do you remember? How many of you are, like, I'm 51. How many of you are older than 51? You might remember something. When I was a kid, I remember this system. It wasn't extend yourself, here's a credit card, go buy something so you can have it today, but it used to be called layaway. So if you're under 30, you'd go, what in the world's that? A layaway, it was you would save the money every month, and you would make payments until finally you had enough to bring home that wash machine, and then you bring it home like 3 months later. And most people who are 20 and 30 go, why would you ever do something so stupid as that? Why not just give your credit card so you can bring it home today? And then they go further down. And then your net worth, everything's just down, down, down. Totally.
Because once you're done, you've got it, and you go, no debt.
Okay. Absolutely. Absolutely. So if you use a credit to buy it, it costs twice as much. And then by the time you've actually paid it off, it's broken. But if you did the layaway, actually in the olden days, by the time you paid it off, you got to bring it home brand new. And then you get to use it for 5 years before it breaks down. That mentality still can work through a budget. You actually can be putting away, even if it's $10 a month, in a bank account. Because you know that one day, in our electronic world, a TV, a computer, I unfortunately just had to get this computer because mine broke down and it was crashing every 20 to 40 times a day we counted over the last week. It's like, okay, I got this seminar coming up. I can't even show anything on my computer, so we had to buy one. $3,000 to buy this computer. When I started the job 5 years ago, it cost me $1,600 for the same computer. Actually, it's weird, but electronics are not made to last because that's the only way they can make money now. It's like they make them plastic, they make them, you know, through small diodes, and it breaks down and doesn't work. And our apps won't run on our electronics any longer beyond almost a year and a half. You need a new computer because now these apps create more draw, and on and on and on it goes. So it's quite a cycle. So it would be really nice if you could go back to the day of layaway, where you can actually save enough so that you can actually finally one day buy that new computer and it's paid for. You don't owe money on it. Yeah.
We have a MacBook 2012.
Yeah.
I had the computer guy come by and fix it a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
3 months after this one, they changed it to a different hard drive, which if you have to replace it, you have to replace the RAM, the motherboard, this. Can't replace the keyboard, can't replace all these things.
Yeah.
But with the one we have, you can still replace individual keys, you can replace individual parts, the RAM, the hard drive.
Yeah, not anymore. Now you throw it away. I need another $3,000. So
change to a PC.
Change to a PC. Let me hide this. So yeah, it's not an Apple. yeah, that's true. So, there's the scripture in the Bible talks about, it's in Galatians chapter 5, about the acts of the flesh. You know, it's adultery, it's murder, and on and on and on. All the bad stuff that we go through in life. We'll also have stuff like lack of self-control in that list. Gossip in that list. So there's some stuff in there. Now that stuff, the reason why it's natural to do that is because we have fallen, and so it's now part of our sinful nature, and we do it. The problem with those kind of things, the acts of the flesh, it's addicting, and there's an appetite that never gets filled. And so it's like, you know, spend, greed, that's on the list, greed. And so it's addicting. I got to keep on going. It's more and more and more. Somehow we got to turn it around and do the fruit of the Spirit. Love, joy, peace. Wouldn't that be nice? Peace. Self-control, long-suffering. And then there's a strange line at the end of that. And it says, against all of these, there is no law. And what that means, if you tear that little line apart, it'd be like this. If everybody actually acted this way, love, joy, peace, self-control, kindness, you wouldn't even need policemen. Like people would be stopped at an intersection and they would, please, you go first. You know, you wouldn't need streetlights. But we're in a world that is on the first part of the list, the acts of the flesh, and we just live there. Us Christians are just as guilty. And so if we could go back to the fruits of the Spirit and live the way God wanted us to, we'd be living a lot easier. It wouldn't be having to keep up with the Joneses and greedy and on and on. Yeah.
Unfortunately, I think that this, largely as a culture, especially probably North American, this whole credit thing, you know how you're just talking about layaway and how it's more common that it's getting credit lines of credit cards, is that the young generation, younger than us, they're seeing this and they're not learning patience.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Like the patience, the self-control, long-suffering, all this, like as far as like finances and stuff go, is they're not generally like necessarily learning
yeah.
these things.
Yeah.
Because of credit cards and doing that, right?
And we don't realize it. We're showing them how. Showing them how to do it the wrong way. And we need to turn that around. You know, even the topic tonight, or this morning that I talked about tithing, our kids, we had them, every time they go babysitting, they would put some aside for Jesus. And wouldn't it be cool if you taught your kids how to not be running after the latest and greatest and how to be investing into the kingdom of God? Like, let's get them on the right track. And I think for them, I know for them, they can't even buy a house, so it's not even on their scope. They would have different aims, different focuses, different priorities in their life. And I think that's what the next generation is going to be faced with. They have to. They don't have a choice. So if we can teach them correctly, sure, it'd be good. So you're right. We need to live by example for them. Larry Burkett does Crown Financial. If you haven't know nothing about Larry Burkett, he's excellent about teaching a lot of stuff on money. I'll actually email you his book, and you'll be able to read through a lot of stuff on it. We'll show you in just a little bit about it. But he says, there are many ways to get into debt, but only one way to get out and to stay out, and it's a simple, simple way, and I think we all know it. It's two little tiny words, self-control. You got to do it. You have to control. We have to learn how to control ourselves, and it's not a bad thing. It's actually a really, really good thing, that's for sure. So then, David Ramsey's is another guy that he does financial stuff in the Christian world, and it's called Solutions. That's his business. And he says, the best way to pay off debt is to use the snowball effect. Snowball effect is this. For example, some of you might have, taken the don't pay for 1 year, buy a TV. Okay, so you know that's coming. And so that's a debt. I keep on going on you. I'm harping on you, Jazz. Okay, don't pay for a year.
If I would have just waited another week.
Our lives are a sermon illustration.
You had to.
I have to. No self-control. So here's the snowball effect. If you look at it this way, if you have more than one debt, how are you going to pay them off? So he says this, and it actually does work. Pay your bottom line required payment, monthly payment on all of them, you have to, or the creditors will come after you. But either the smallest one, and go to this one here. Where do you put that? I'll get back that down. I thought I had it on there. You either pay the smallest debt, so you can get it off your back quick. Or you pay the one with the highest interest so that you can get that one off your back, because that'll kill you quick. So either one of them. And what you do is you try and pay that one off first. Now, what most of us will do as soon as that's paid off, then we say, oh, now I got some extra money to spend. No, that's not it. Then you take that money, because if you were paying $50 on this and $200 on that car payment and $500 on this payment, well, so you finally have paid off the $100, so now you take that and you start paying it on to the next one. So now you are compounding your payment on that next one, and then finally you can pay that guy off maybe in 5 years, and then the next one, on and on and on it goes. So you need to pay down your debt by snowballing, starting off at the most motivating one for you. That might be the smallest or the highest interest. I don't know.
You should always count your highest interest rate.
I agree with you.
First,
I agree with you.
That's
horrible.
Then 9% on a line of credit of $2,000.
Yeah. So you want to go line of credit then. Line of credit is about 4%, right?
A line of credit, it depends on what kind of line of credit you have and how old it is, but like an average is about 8% right now.
Wow. Bank with PC Financial, now called Simply. Prime is, yeah.
3.95.
Absolutely. But that's better than 20%. So you have to at least do that. Find a way to, if you have to go to your bank and get it amalgamized and brought into something different, get it to the lowest interest. That should be your first step, definitely. The lowest interest, bring it down. Because you got to pay those high interests off. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what I have.
It had to do with more accessibility to more functions. That's why they switched from
for points programs and stuff like that. Right.
Credit unions are always going to offer you a little bit of a better rate.
That's right. Because they want your business and they can.
Well, they can.
Yeah.
It's not just because they want your business and they can. It's because they actually care about the people that are walking in.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. They're not such a big enterprise. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, there's the three big ones, and then everybody else, the locals like Valley First, and on it goes. Yeah, there's different ones, yeah. So try your best to do the snowball effect. So that's either paying off first, like you got to pay your lowest payments, you have to do that, and then pay off either the smallest one, because that was motivating, and I got that $100 guy off. Okay, now I can use that $100 for something else. Or it's the highest interest. But you're right, if you can get that highest interest, if you're doing a credit card at 20%, you've got to change that by going to something else because you'll never pay that off. It's just like the problem that they had in the United States where mortgages actually were interest-only payments. Like they went, that was in 2008. They died because of it. So if that's what you're doing with your credit cards, you will never get ahead. It's the same principle. You've got to be able to be paying some of that debt down too, not just interest.
I think they have to calculate some of the principal in now. So don't they have somebody suggested a minimum payment? Yeah, 2% of the principal goes in.
2%. Yeah. On a credit card and line of credit is the same. Line of credits, for the most part, are interest-only required payment.
Because they're already
there.
Credit cards are 2% of your principal plus interest.
Yep.
It's a whole 2%.
Yeah, for sure. This is what the Bible says about those who have credit cards. The rich, so RBC Bank and all them, the rich rule over us poor little people, and the borrower is a slave to the lender. And so that's in the Bible, and we become their slave, and we never get out. Yeah? Do you have a question?
If we go deeper, we're not supposed to be free. We're not supposed to be the more smart people in this world.
Yeah.
We're supposed to have this creativity to have the Holy Spirit teach us.
Yeah, come on. I know, come on.
No, but the question, I read this Bible for 17 years, and I just see all the promise there. Okay, if we believe in that, why we walk like people in the world?
Yeah.
So it's just a question asked.
Absolutely.
And how many times Jesus said, you are here to be free, you are here to be
free. Yeah.
And I don't know, for me, it's just, okay, where is this real life?
Yeah, and so you hit the nail on the head about the verse that I said about the fruit of the Spirit. So the closer you get to Jesus, the more that stuff gets chiseled off, and you walk closer to Jesus, and all of a sudden you start becoming more self-control. You're right.
We're supposed to create things. We're supposed to be the more smart people to bring solutions.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's where we're used by God. Oh.
Yeah.
Right? Anyway.
Yeah. So this is, go ahead.
Yeah, but don't forget, when you go back to the previous slide,
yep.
The rich, which is the bank, they're very insidious about it. Like I've been bombarded with.
Through your friend.
I know, I didn't understand that. I get these emails saying, you qualify for so much for RSP, and then make the deduction, which you have to make with them, and then you get the tax deduction.
Yeah. You're right.
And let me invest it at 3%.
You're right.
And they just keep cranking.
But, first of all, depending on your financial institution, an RRSP
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we'll talk about that at the end too. You're right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Here's the thing. I've got quite a few of these emails, and I'm retired. Like, you know, I've done my hours.
I don't need it anymore.
No, it's just a lot. And I love it when they say, "Dear Malcolm," it's
personal. Yeah, yeah. It's not. They care.
Thank you, Malcolm.
They have your attention.
Yeah. They really do. Scotiabank, I also bank at Scotiabank, and their slogan is, "You are richer than you think." Because they want you to keep on borrowing and borrowing.
That's Scotiabank, right?
Scotiabank, yeah, you're richer than you think.
Scotiabank for, personally, just for their
basic stuff. But honestly, their intention is good. I think when they started off the whole thing about a credit card, it was just to allow you to have a little more breathing room temporarily, hoping you'd be smart enough to not go that far down, because you needed a little tiny window until you could pay that off and then keep on going like a normal human being. But we are the bad people. We got it out of control, and we just snowball it up instead of snowballing it down.
They started under the same guise or principle the banks initially started under. Money was loaned into existence. It actually didn't really exist. It was just like it was loaned from this person, that person, or from that
yep.
person.
Yeah, just to temporarily help you. That's it. It was good.
But they're insidious because they keep sending you those notes too, I guess, if you qualify, saying you've just been pre-qualified to increase your limit.
Yeah, keep on going. All right,
$50,000.
That's where that $22,000 commercial debt comes from, right there. All in the credit cards.
I can't believe it's only that, though.
Yeah, that's an average. So you got to, that's the medium.
Yeah. Approximation based on metadata, not all of the recorded
yep.
data, based on lower.
Yeah, exactly.
Subsidized and all the other.
Here's what Malcolm was saying. This is a wise way to do it. And you were talking about a little bit about it too, about borrowing money so that you can get an RSP and pay less taxes. So this is what the wealthy will use debt only to purchase assets to result in future gain. But you stop there. You don't keep on going. So that's how they get richer, because they're wise. They know how to stop when it's time to stop. So they'll borrow a little bit to buy that, you know, skyscraper, whatever it might be. But that skyscraper then will be sold on the market, and they'll double their money. So there's things like that. But you have to know what type of investments to get. You have to be wise with it. And that's not my expertise. But there are some great financial investors, advisors out there that can give you some good wisdom and some advice when it comes to that kind of stuff. But that's what they'll do. So the next point, invest now. That's the next point. How do you invest? And we got to know what's the best way to invest, what's the best thing to do. Right now, I don't know if it'll be the best time. I really don't know, but to buy a house at this moment. Because you might want to wait till after the elections to see what happens to the market. So you've got to know when it's the right time to buy. Yeah.
If you've got money sitting around, my suggestion is to put it in the market.
Property market.
No.
In
stock market.
The
market's crap right now. Now is the time to buy. It's like buying.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know where's a good place to buy right now? United States. Because they don't like Trump right now, or there's all this turmoil, and the stock market has gone like this over the last couple months. Buy now, because we know the United States is going to go up. They will. There's no question about it. They're going to climb back up again. So you will make money on your money for that. Yeah. But you got to be wise. Yeah. Yeah.
You drive down the I-5 and you drive through Maryville and Bellingham and you're
looking
for coffee. It looks digital down there. Like, I know that doesn't represent all of the economy.
Yeah.
But I've been wrong for a while now because I just say cautious.
I know.
I think with all their debt, and the U.S. has more debt than ever, like 20 trillion, I don't even know how big that number is.
is $23.5 trillion right now.
$23.5 trillion.
Yeah, I looked at that this morning.
The last $3.5 trillion.
That crazy?
That's
it's crazy.
Yeah, how big is $23.5 trillion?
It's crazy.
$12 trillion.
Yeah. Ronald Reagan had $7 trillion. Now it's $22.5 trillion. Yeah. 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 Even imagine what a trillion is. That's just out of control. Yep.
I don't think there's any short thing in this world at the moment. No. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is everything thriving or is everything like...
It's shaky right now.
I just don't think there is a sure thing. Like, you could be right. Maybe investing in the states and stocks, maybe that's a great...
Yeah.
And I've been wrong lots of times too, so my new plan is to do nothing.
Yeah. New plan. Yeah.
Some gold, some material, some gold, some silver.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like
a hard stock, like gold.
Yeah, because this is yeah. Always
the, yeah, that's a possibility. Yeah, equities like money kind of goes like this. It's tough. You know, one thing that's kind of weird. Maybe you don't have to buy the house where you live. Maybe you buy the house somewhere else where you know the market's going to do well, like Kitimat. Kitimat's going to do well. Why? Because the pipeline is coming across. From Red Deer, coming across through Kitimat, and I know a lot of BCRs don't like it, but it's going to happen, whether we like it or not. Those houses within the next year are going to go whoosh. So if you're to buy now and sell later, that'd be great. But don't put it all everything in it, that's for sure. But maybe a little bit, like go into partnership with someone or something like that. Maybe, yeah. So you got to be wise with what you're doing, and you don't want to buy when it's high. You want to buy when it's low, and it looks like it's going to go up. At least a little, and then sell quick. And then you can get a little, but, yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Right. You don't at all. And for some of us, for most of us in our churches, most church people, investing itself is not even on their chart. Like, we can't. So maybe they got a bank account. Don't go into the checking. Go into the savings account. Like, save a little bit, but not very much. But at least you're getting a little bit of something. But the bottom line is you need to be in the property market. You got to somehow be in the property market because it seems to have been the best one all along. And if you don't have a property, you are renting. And if you're renting, what happens to your money? It's going down the toilet. So we know we have to have a house, and we know the house is fairly stable market. So maybe that's going to be the only investment you got. And that's fine. Properties. Absolutely, all the time. So there's many multi-millionaires in Vancouver now just because of starting from about 1985 when Expo came in and on it goes and just went, and they're just doing this with their, buying, using one house to buy the next house and on it goes. Yes, very, very true. Andy Stanley has this quote, saving money in the bank leads to peace in the mind. So even if it's the very bottom line, a savings account, at least I'm not going to lose money on it, and I might be gaining 0.00001%, but at least I'm gaining something and it's not going down the toilet, and I'm not spending it. So I want to challenge you, have more than one. You have the savings account that you know, well, I'm going to have to dip in next month because I know I'm going to need it. But you got this other little one over here, and it might only have $100 in it. It doesn't cost you anything to have a savings account, and keep your $100 there, and you can generate a little bit of money. So that can help a little bit. At the very, very bottom line, we got to somehow learn to save just a little bit. So history, both primary properties and rental properties have been very profitable investments. We've just been talking about that. That's our history. So historically, your primary property, and if you got some extra or partnership with someone, you could do a rental. Great. I mean, I envy this one guy, if you want to talk about envy being Christian or not, I don't know. One guy in our church in Penticton when I was pastoring there, he started like 40 years ago. He's 65 now, just retired. He has 21 properties, and he's not, doesn't come from a wealthy family or anything. He was a builder. And while he was living in his house, he bought another house and caught on to the idea, oh, I could sell this and use this now to go against the next one. So these are all rental properties. Well, his retirement is cushy now. And he was just an average Joe and he couldn't survive. But now he's got this rental property. So if you could do that, that can work. Maybe it's just renting out your basement because someone needs it. You go to Vancouver now, and young adults, they can't do nothing but rent a basement. Yeah.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
I have people I know do that in the U.S. buy a house very, like, in very poor
place. Yeah.
Get a house, like, very cheaper, like $10,000, and rent this house for $1,000 a month. Do you think this is fair?
Yeah, no, it's not.
The question I have is, do you think in front of God it's fair to, because these people aren't able to buy the house, so we just screw them.
Oh, I know.
So for me, it's do the same thing you wanted people to do for you. So where we go with all of this?
Where are we going? I think we're going to hit a wall. we're going to be in trouble.
That's my point. And if you talk, this guy's a Jew, so I'm being with Israel with him.
Yeah.
So, and for him, it's totally okay. Come on, it's normal. I just.
Yeah.
For him, it's fine. The life is good and it's okay. The people. But what do you think about that?
About buying and buying?
No, I'm buying a house at $10,000.
And renting out.
And renting out $1,000 for you a month. So in 10 months, I buy my house. But
that's just taking
advantage. Yeah.
Yeah, but.
Yeah, it is.
That competitiveness that is thrust on.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, here's the answer. Yeah.
So what are they going to do? I mean, most people that are selling or renting out their suites, they're just going to go, I'm going to do what I have to do, or I should get what everybody else is selling it for. I just kind of. And there's sort of like a mind twist that happens. It's like, well, it is an investment.
It's
I did invest
rate.
It for
it's
a
rate.
Reason.
Yeah.
Like, what am I going to do about below the market value? I mean, it's just like, what is the
market? I know.
I know. There's like a moral, tearing. It's like,
yeah.
What do you do, right? Like, it's funny, though, because we were actually advised by a realtor I talked to off coast, Dave Jarvis with Royal LePage. He said to me, you're kind of subject to that right now. He says, don't even buy right now. Yeah, this is a realtor told me this 8 months ago. He says, pretty premature right now to even think about buying anything right now.
Yeah.
I'm just being honest with you. He said, wait. And yeah, I mean, this is what it's
but the
it's
problem
it's
is
a
really
gouging market. Nobody can save anything. Nobody
because
has any extra overhead.
Yeah.
I see Sheldon property tax is actually it's higher here. It's really high here, the property tax annually. I think it's a lot
yeah.
of taxes, right?
They've reevaluated the whole province. It's quite crazy right now.
Yeah. So
property
yeah.
taxes. Whew, the whole province.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah,
yeah.
Everybody's
yeah.
talking about
About renting out at
the
moral, yeah.
It's more
yeah.
about, okay, it's okay. It's, I don't know. For me, I prefer to win in the lotto than do that.
Yeah.
For me, it's stealing people.
Yeah.
It's currently, I bid a house in 10 months.
Yeah.
And you don't have a choice, so I'm just, okay, I'm screwing you. I'm just.
It started with greed, though, and the investors, obviously. We could all throw the investors under the bus and say, everybody screwed it up for us. The investors, off coast, offshore people that weren't taxed enough, and that buyer tax or whatever
yep.
that was put on, it was in the lower mainland or whatever.
International?
Yeah. And so it didn't affect the lower, people just bought more property here because there was an influx of property because they weren't being taxed on the outside by us.
I know.
Also, it's a stimulus for the government to say, we're going to put taxes on these foreign buyers. 15% isn't going to hurt them. That's just 15% more in the man's pocket,
yeah.
right? And they're the ones that implemented that BC homebuyer loan that was going on for a while. It lasted like a few months, right?
Yeah.
I think the entitled took advantage of it. They already had like a 5 or 10% down. They're like, hey, I can get a match. I can get a 2.5% match. Hey,
yeah.
Mom and Dad, take out a home equity loan, and I can get a $2 million home now.
Yeah.
$70 million or whatever it was, in however many months, was gone like instantly.
Yeah.
Right? That homebuyer loan agenda.
Yeah.
And we just barely missed it. We almost did it, but it was just,
yeah.
Like there's no. no any stimulus. It's just like it almost hurt us more. The BC home buyer loan, it almost hurt us more because the rich got richer. I think that people got higher value homes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So now there's even less inventory now.
Yeah, there is. Yeah.
It's terrible. It's bare bones. So people can buy lots, but they can't do anything with them.
Yeah. Yeah, good point. You had a point?
Oh, yeah, I wanted to ask a question. Good.
Yep.
So as a Christian, or is there any way in the Bible you can use
them?
Like, buying and selling. You want to make profit. What is the maximum percentage of profit you can make?
As a Christian?
Yes, as a Christian.
I guess every person has to kind of weigh that themselves. And that would be similar to your question.
Yeah.
Like, do you start being nice to other people instead? And give your property cheaper and be normal to them instead of charging them more high interest or high rental and stuff. Yeah, we can do that. That's each one individual person. We have to make that decision and maybe act a little bit more reasonable. Yeah.
Do we not think that there's a moral and ethical standard within business like that? That there has to be a moral and ethical.
Absolutely. Yes.
That's great.
I'd be worried if I had a $400,000 home that I know I paid $350,000 for and I could make $7,000 on it, I would have a hard time not selling it for that, especially if it was just an investor that had the cash money.
Yeah, this is not, really this is not the same.
I know what you're saying. What's the money? Yeah, I totally
don't
hear you.
Mean, like, selling your house or whatever, but I mean, if you're like he was talking about, like,
yes,
as a cheating landlord.
Yep.
Do you not have a moral and ethical, as a Christian landlord, have a moral and ethical obligation?
I agree. I agree, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But God can give you wisdom. Like, I read a book on there, I'm sure you remember this guy, but you need to buy a car, but it's for reproduction, and the car can be between $200 to $5,000.
Yeah,
each.
Yeah.
So they always have the discernment to choose the good one.
Yeah.
And after the people go see him, say, who's give you this wisdom to choose the good one and to choose?
God.
Yeah, so
yeah.
I believe we can go, like, to make a good deal and to find a good investment, and it's no problem to make.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To make, you know, if the government is there, the people buy this. I have no problem with that. But when you, it's just I buy a car like $1,000 and I charge you $100 a month.
Yeah.
The car, I would feel like, I don't know.
For sure, absolutely, I agree with you. And I think when it comes to investments, it's a lot like the Bible story of Joseph. For 7 years, God gave him wisdom to stock up. And invest, like they could have ate it all. They could have ate everything. But no, they took a little bit and they invested for 7 years. So God knew there'd be 7 years of famine that would follow and they would have enough to survive. So yes, but you got to treat people God-like in the middle of it too.
Yeah.
But you got to invest. It's kind of nice having the investments where it's not connected with a person, like on the stock market. But when you got a house, now you got the person living next door. So there's a little bit of personal feelings there too. Yeah.
Stuff, it's like a huge, like $100,000, like every hour. He does, I don't know, example.
Yeah.
And no people can fix it for, like, I don't know, many times. Just the guys go there and you know what happened.
Yeah.
He fixed in a couple of minutes. He sent the bill $1 million.
Wow. Wow.
He said, why? Oh,
yeah.
Because I know what I need to do. And he paid, you don't have choice. But it's true.
Yeah.
We have to remember, too, that there's so many people in the world that are not Christian, first of all. So they're not governed, of course, a lot. They're not governed by the Lord and by that relationship.
Yeah.
And then also there's, like we're talking about at the very beginning, it's the love of money and greed. And that can rule a lot of people's hearts and decisions, right?
Oh, it does. Yeah, it drives you. It drives you for sure.
Yeah.
here's the next one here. The best option when it comes to investments, so we'll end investments kind of on this, is diversify. Do not put everything in one pocket, because that pocket could go down. It could be the United States. You got stuff in equities out there, and United States does not climb. And oh no, I listened to Darwin on that day. I thought I was going to climb. Don't put everything over there. Just put $20 over there, okay? And put like $20 over here. Whatever you want to do, like diversify, unless it is a guaranteed thing, like a short-term deposit at a bank. You might get 3% on that, but you're not going to lose your money. You can even do it. And they actually dropped the insurance on it just last year. I think it used to be $1 million was the line. Anything under that would be insured for, like, say, if the bank closed. But now it's down to, I think it's 90,000 or 99. So, I mean, if you had that much money to invest, in other words, anything underneath that is also insured if there's a tragedy. You won't lose your capital. So that's a good thing. There's an insurance at a bank, like a short-term investment. There's an insurance that'll back you up on that kind of thing. They even got like the GICs, Guaranteed Investment System. You can do that too. So diversify in all kinds of different things. There's nothing wrong with trying to put a couple dollars. It doesn't have to be half your paycheck. Maybe it's 20 bucks. But if you start doing that, eventually it will grow. And then you'll be able to do something, have a little bit of breathing space. So that's an important thing. Here's one verse about it, Proverbs 21. The wise store up choice food and olive oil. So that's all the luxuries, whatever it might be. So those are just the words they used. But the fool gulps theirs down. So you can actually put that down in whatever it is. It could be the wise person puts money into a house. The fool buys a brand new car because you'll gobble it up and you'll lose it anyways. Whatever that might be. I'm not talking about your truck. Actually, I like your truck. Your truck, my car. We're the same game. I got it. But yeah, so, and who said this? The richest man known probably still today, and the wisest man in the world outside of Jesus, King Solomon. The wise, he got it. He stored things because someday you might need it. But don't only do that because you could die and no one used it, you didn't share it, whatever. But you got to be putting something away for that rainy day. So number four, that leads us to this morning. I'm going to circle back at it really quickly because this is really important. Be generous. Now, if that's not at this church, wherever, invest in God's work is what this is saying. Because that'll last forever. Forever. That's longer than the next market crash that we have coming around the corner. That is longer than a GIC guaranteed insurance. That you got to invest in heaven because it'll go on way past anything else. And you'll get on the other side and you'll go, you know what? I was glad I listened to you, Darwin. I'll meet you one day on the other side of that line. And you'll go, I listened to you about tithing. I started investing in the purpose of God's work. And I am sure glad I listened to you now. I know you will. Now, others won't. And that's fine. That's great. And some here in this room, we won't. Whatever. The average Canadian that we think of, that we've kind of figured out in our Pentecostal churches, is 3% of people's income. They'll tithe 3%. So wouldn't it be cool if they actually were investing 10% like God had kind of set up? They don't have to, but maybe they want to invest a little bit more in that pocket because it's never going to die or go away. That's a really good pocket to invest in heaven. So when you're investing in heaven, generosity will change your life. Like it just, there's something about it. I couldn't really focus on it too much this morning, but it changes your heart. It does. When you give, Jesus knew what he was talking about when he said it is more blessed to give away than it is to keep. And so maybe you also not only want to put $20 in a bank account or a GIC and grow that up, maybe you also want to give $20 away to someone down the street who's poor and has nothing. Why not? That's what you're talking about. Why don't we share with those who can't afford? Why don't we do that Christian thing? Because it's really important. Yeah.
Like when I go downtown Vancouver, I'm more likely to buy a cup of coffee or hot chocolate for someone than give them money because I feel like I'd be supporting addiction too. Right?
Yeah.
But like there's things you can do that I think that's in some cases money isn't as good as the things you can give people, like the food.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. Shovel the driveway, whatever it is. Yeah. Yeah. Show them how to work. Don't just hand out the money. That's what you're saying. Exactly. You know, along with that, that kind of, That reminds me of something that bothered my wife and I when we were early in youth ministry. We live in Edmonton, and my wife went to Superstore. It was new back then. She went to Superstore, and she was on her way, and it was dark. In Edmonton, it kind of gets dark fast. She was on her way back to her car, and a guy was following her, and it was a guy asking for money. And said, you have some money? I forget the exact words. And she turned back. She says, sorry, I just don't have any money. And he turns back to her and he says, I probably make more money than your husband. And my wife is like, what? She's trying to think, okay, you're asking for money. You live on the street. You make more money. And I was a youth pastor. I didn't make a whole lot. And he goes, yeah, I make over $40,000 a year. Back then, which would have been 1997, begging for money on the street. So that can happen. So I'm saying, no, roll up your sleeves, go to work, join the team. Don't just beg for money. So that's kind of a different topic. My whole topic and that whole thing is we need to work. We got to work. And that's part of God's plan. God wants us to do that. He wants us to work and put some effort in and actually supply for our family. We need to do that too, not just kind of get freebies all the time. So that's just a kind of commercial. Yeah.
You say you need to work, it's be okay, it's doing everything right, you pray for the sun and everything, and you crash and everything grows.
Yeah.
It's be God in the end control everything.
Yeah,
we
exactly.
We control everything, we think we can do that, but in the end, we don't. What we really control.
I know. It's true.
I don't know. Just a question.
Yeah. In the end, we got to watch what we're doing. So, your stuff, like I talked about this morning, is the chief competitor of your heart. Obviously, we know that. I don't have to harp on that very long and keep on going, but this is something I want to talk about. So that's the answer was your stuff is a competitor of your heart. Derek Huff, some of you might know of, might watch Dancing with the Stars. How many watch Dancing with the Stars? My wife is addicted to it. I'm like, oh, man, I got to watch this again. But Derek Huff was one of the guys that kind of started off, so he's very excellent dancer kind of a guy and one of their first primary dudes. He went on American Ninja Warrior as a competitor. Some of you know American Ninja Warrior on TV, and so they do all kinds of extreme, I've got to climb a wall, and the person who wins. Well, this one, this particular one, was for celebrities. And so they didn't get the money. They actually were able to give the money away to their foundation, whatever they wanted to do, their charity. And he said this, after he didn't win, but he was given $10,000, and what are you going to do with it? He said this, the secret to living, this is not even a Christian, the secret to living is giving. It's really good. When you give, it's fun. Now, I'm sure he's a multimillionaire, okay? But he probably gives a lot. He's kind of caught on to the idea that there's something rich for yourself when you give away and bless other people. So God's asking us to be generous. 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 8 says this, and God is able to bless you back abundantly in many different ways, make your furnace last longer, whatever it is, so that in all things, at all times, having all that you need, you will abound in every good work. Again, like I said this morning, the whole reason for all of it is so that, again, you can serve him with your money and you can help him and you can bless the kingdom and win more souls with your money. So giving always results in, the next one, joy. It just does. Joy. Happiness is not joy. Happiness goes with your experiences, and you go up and down, and, oh, I got more margin today. Oh, now I got less margin because now I can't afford. Happiness goes in and out, but joy never disappears. Like, never. The joy of the Lord becomes your strength. And when you're doing things the way God wants you to do, and you're being generous and blessing those that don't have very much, something happens in your heart and it never goes away. Like, never does. You can live on it. You can rest your head down at night on it. You can relax on it. Your marriage probably grows better on it. And on and on and on it goes. So being generous is good, but it doesn't sound right. Like, shouldn't I be stocking it up? Shouldn't I be using it? No, you also need to be giving away too, which is really, really good. As I mentioned this morning, God has always asked us in the Old Testament, New Testament, never changed, to give, save, so we talked about those both today, and to live on the rest. So that's what I want to kind of talk about is living on the rest. Give, save, and live on the rest. How do you live on the rest? So when it comes to the New Testament, Jesus really narrowed on percentages. Yes, the Old Testament mentioned 10% you give, but percentages was really important in the New Testament. And we don't really notice it a lot, but we do notice it on the story of the lady with the two mites, small mites. And Jesus, in that room, when he saw that lady giving these two mites, which, by the way, was the smallest currency known then, and today nothing would even come close to it, it was worth about 6 minutes of a month's work. Like nothing. Like 6 minutes of your month. So it's like not even a penny. And so she gave this, and Jesus said back to his disciples, she has given more than all these rich people. So that was not a sum. She didn't give 10 million bucks. She gave 100%. Percent hits God's heart more than amount. Are you giving a percent, at least the percent that God has asked you to give? Because that's what touches his heart. Not leftover change, not even 10,000 bucks, because maybe, I don't know your income, maybe you make $1 million a year, so 10,000 bucks is nothing. But the usher on Sunday thought that was pretty good. I do remember when I was pastoring in Penticton, it was a smaller church and ended up being a very large church, 1,800 people. And there was one guy at the end of every year, and he was quite wealthy. He did it with a good heart, great guy. Now, he was way more wealthier than this, but he'd come in and anything close to this, maybe a little more, maybe a little less, it was always around $50,000 check he'd drop on my desk. He wanted to make sure I saw it. I hate that. But I used it anyways, okay? We used it in the church. It was great. But I knew that was a drop in the bucket for this guy. He wanted to trumpet it and everybody see it. And you make sure you know this is me. That's my name. See that check? That's me. 50,000. Isn't that good? That guy, even one day, I was at the prayer line. And this is maybe a little sidetrack, a little commercial. I was on the prayer line in the front. We had a prayer line, you know, in the middle of worship. And I'm praying. And he comes up to me and he goes, I'm asking, what can I pray for? I don't want to mention his name. And he said, Darwin, you see my suit? He goes like this, opens up his suit. Harry Rosen, you know how much money this is worth? I'm going, this is at the altar. Like I'm trying to pray for people who have needs. I don't care about your jacket. So some Christians, they're so far off the track of pride when it comes to their giving. Don't do that. But he was even off the track on percentages. So the issue in the New Testament, for sure, is percentage. That's what hits God's heart when it comes to generosity. It's not just the little drop, 20 bucks. It's not buying the coffee. Well, that's great. It touches God's heart. You're sharing. You're helping the people. That's all good. It's all good. It's all good. But if it actually didn't hurt you, it's probably not going to amount up to very much. That's kind of the bottom line. Those who are quite wealthy and they're giving away 20 bucks, well, what's 20 bucks to them? Who cares? So us who are kind of average wealthy, well, what's a dollar? Nothing. I can give a dollar. That's just a loony. Okay, maybe I'll go a toonie. But that's nothing. Like it really is nothing in our culture. That's not being generous. Generous, you feel it. Yeah. When you're being generous to someone, you feel it. And that's when it starts to do something in your heart because you felt like it. You bless them. Maybe it's just because they had the need that made you feel good in your heart. But when it cost you, you feel it. David said a quote in the Old Testament, I give nothing to God that doesn't cost me anything. So he was willing to make a big sacrifice. This has cost me. This hurts. And I'm wanting to bless someone. I want to obey you, Jesus. You asked me to help this church. You asked me to whatever it is, the desire you have in your heart to serve and be generous toward. You've asked me to do this. I got it on my heart. I'm going to do it. And you know what? I know that I could use this $100 for whatever it might be, but I'm going to be willing not to buy that object because I want to touch your heart, God, and I want to meet a need. So that's kind of generosity. So I will not place my trust in riches. This is what Andy Stanley preaches a lot in great church down in the United States. But in the one who richly provides, God. So the bottom line with all of our money, because your investments might crash, but if you are investing in the kingdom of God, you're investing in the right pocket that'll never disappear, and you're putting your trust in Him that He'll help you through every valley you walk through. So we need to make sure that we're just putting our trust in Jesus. The world evaluates money, I said this morning, so I'll kind of close on this section, evaluates money by what we have to show for it, but God evaluates money by who we'll have to show for it when we cross that finish line at the end of our life. Whose lives did we change? Maybe they became a Christian, maybe they didn't, but we did what Jesus asked us to do. We gave a cup of cold water to someone who needed a cup of water. We did whatever we could. We helped people who were in need, and we blessed people, and that's all He asked us to do. You mean refuse giving? Is that what you mean? What would you refuse?
Let's take an example. You can have a blessing and have everything you want, but God show you it's not what you want. And you can throw out the way.
Oh, and you're buying the wrong things? Is that what you mean?
You're not just buying the wrong thing. You just example, you just take example. You're in a relation, you have everything you can imagine. You have like a beautiful condo, you have business, you have everything.
Yeah.
But something inside say, okay, you're not in a good place. Get out of there.
Yeah.
So this is...
Follow the leading of the Spirit.
This is to be in fear or to just say, okay, God, I trust you. Doesn't matter what happened. Anyway. It's just
that's a tough one. You can't answer that blanket for everybody, carte blanche, that's for sure. But if God is leading you, you need to do what God's asking you to do. That's for sure. And that's a tough one, though. I'd walk through counsel. This is a verse that I love in the Bible, in the Proverbs. In the counsel of many, there is wisdom. So you need to be talking to people and work your way through that to find what decision to make. Yeah.
The right people.
The right people, yes. Yes, absolutely.
A few key mentors.
Are you sure the guy wasn't trying to give you his dress jacket? Thank you. I don't have one of those.
I'll ask him when I get to heaven. I know. I was like, whoa. Yeah. Oh, no, it's crazy, 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 crazy. Okay, so if you were to walk on a tightrope, you go to a circus, you see people walking on a tightrope. The very first thing that they learn as someone who walks on a tightrope or anything like a straight line, maybe the police officer asks you to walk on a straight line, if you are walking on a tightrope, the only way you can make it to the other end is you got to keep your eye on the target.
Right.
You have to. You look down. What happens if you look down? Whoa. Because where do you go? That becomes your target. You go down. You got to keep your eye on the target, wherever you're aiming at. It's very, very important. And along the way, you got to make corrections. You're like, whoa, steady, steady, steady. Okay, now keep on going. What's that? So, yeah, exactly. So, to stay balanced on a tightrope, you have to keep focusing on the prize. Wherever that prize is, that's where I'm going. So that could be in your budget, and I hope somewhere in your budget after today, that's also the souls of people that'll make it into heaven. I hope that's your prize, way up there. So I'm going to invest in that. But in your budget, while you're making your budget, all that kind of stuff, you got your prize, whatever your prize is, you got to keep focused on it and keep correcting all the time. You got to readjust your budget. You got to change this over here. I only gave a couple bucks. I got to change that next month, and I got to try and give a little bit more. As I'm investing in eternity, I know that's going to change my life and change everybody else. So, Luke chapter 6, verse 38, give, and it'll be given back to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together. See, these are Jesus' words. And running over, will be poured into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. So, here's where a lot of people get off track with that verse. They think, oh, that's for my gain, so I get more. No, no, no. It'll be poured back into your lap so you can again give more. He's not going to give to you to be a selfish, spoiled little brat and get all that you can for you and stock up your stockpiles. That's not what this is about. But if you give generously, God will give back to you. And you'll be able to give more, and you'll have your back and walk with him. Now, isn't it a great comforting thought when you look at, you know, the dirty 30s, the whole world crashed down in their market, and who knows what's going to happen in the future, but actually God can be with you as you go through it? That's a comforting thought. But those who are not generous, those who don't do the first word, you see, this is subject to your actions. So those who are selfish and don't want to give, it won't be given back to you. And when you go through times of trouble, it won't be brought into your lap and he won't have your back. You got to look at it both ways. So those that are generous, you don't have to worry about where you're going to lay your head because God is going to walk with you through it. And I don't know what is, I don't preach the prosperity gospel because it doesn't work in Africa. Like it doesn't. So you can't name it and claim it. And if you're rich, that means God is blessing you. Well, how about the other 96% of the world? God doesn't bless them? So that's not what it's about. But it is about blessing you, helping you, taking care of what you got, what you need for sure. Even your wants. I love sharing stuff with my kids. I love buying them great things. They didn't need it, but they wanted it. God does the same for us. It's all good. It's all fine. But we do have to give to be able to get that. So here's the last one. Something about a budget. Start. Start a budget. This is where we're going to land today. So maybe before we dig a little bit further in that, we want to stop for some coffee. We'll talk about the budget. We'll talk about taxes. So forget about the whole Bible verses. We're going to leave those behind as we go into the budget a little bit and talk about it.